Hi, welcome to the Now Spinning Magazine podcast with me, Phil Aston. And in this episode, I'm absolutely delighted to have with me Russell Gilbrook, the drummer from legendary rock band Uriah Heep. Now, the band have just released another fantastic album, Chaos and Colour, which follows a stunning run of albums which started in 2007-2008 when Russell joined with Wake the Sleeper, then Into the Wild, Outsider, Living the Dream, and now, as I said, Chaos and Colour. Now, the new album is different in some ways because four of the songs are actually composed by yourself and your writing partner, Simon, for the first time. This is the first album you've been in with your Heap where you've actually contributed some of the songs. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Phil. What happened regarding this album in a strange way, really, was that because of the dreaded pandemic that shut us all away, you know, we're very much a touring band.
Of course, yeah.
It gave an opportunity for everyone to get their creative juices together because we knew we had an album to come up with. I've always had lots of ideas and bits and pieces, but if you write as a team, it's very important that magic, that chemistry works. You can't just go ahead and start writing with another person. It doesn't really work like that. And yeah, Obviously, as everyone knows, Phil and Mick have been a writing team for over 30 odd years, and it's proved very successful indeed. And it's just something they like to do. They work nicely together and they get on with it. Well, I just thought, well, what am I going to do? You know, I can't do anything. Right, I want to put all my ideas down. I did go through a few guitarists who didn't quite get the idea and weren't quite connected with what I had to offer. And luckily for me, I've got quite a few, obviously, musician friends of mine, but I've known Simon Pinto for, you know, well over 30 years. And he's a great musician, plays great drums, bass and guitar, but he gets classic rock, he gets it, and he knows me as a person and a musician as well. So we hit it off straight away. And it was at the time when the pandemic was sort of easing a little bit, I was able to go over his house and spend, you know, quite a bit of time there saying to him, well, I want this chord progression, it's got to be like Gypsy. This was Hail the Samurai. It's got to be like Gypsy. It's a great 85 BPM type of stomp. And the fans love that kind of thing. So this work on an idea based around a Gypsy and have a real great old school chorus that's really nice along that people could probably think going back to the 70s and imagine David Byron singing. So we did a lot of research on the old stuff, as well as my own personality, naturally, to try and gain what we felt the original band would try and do, like with the likes of David Byron singing it, to get that kind of element and feel back in, but obviously with the band of today. And so we messed around a lot, but we hit it off quickly. A lot of the ideas came very quickly, and no shouting matches. We really were smooth about changing a few bits and pieces, this, that, and the other, and we're very happy with the result.
Yeah, because Simon's worked with such a wide variety of people, hasn't he? And genres of music, anything from Adam Wakeman, Tony Hadley from Spandau Ballet, Brian May, Steps, all sorts of stuff. So it's interesting. So you did, as you just said, immerse yourself in the world of Uriah Heep when you started to pull these songs together. So were you involved more with the lyrics, or was it a joint thing on everything.
I would say that Simon's a little bit better on the lyrical thing more than me, but the subjects were down to us, because we wanted to write about, we didn't want to, you know, baby, I love you type thing. No. We wanted to write something that we thought would be really cool to write about, but also give a little bit of variation to people's imagination, because people interpret lyrics in a different way, even though sometimes it's very obvious. And I think that's nice. It's nice for people to get hold of, if you're into lyrics, to get hold of those lyrics and take them on board as your own thoughts as well, which is good. So, no, it was all literally, you know, I'm very good at coming up with arrangements. I'm very good with counter melody lines and chord progressions and stuff. And so, therefore, I'm able to chuck them at Simon, who puts them down. Then we have a listen back. Then we change this. It's got to go to there. I'm not sure about that bit. Okay. Now, right, this one's going to be about, say, hurricane's going to be about the weather, but that's quite a boring thing. So let's make it right. Go back to the ancestors who thought that it was the gods. Screaming down on them. And tried to make the music represent the lyrics. That's what we're very good at as well, was trying to make the lyrical content work with the music. So you could shut your eyes and listen to the music, then read the lyrics and listen to the music, and hopefully shut your eyes again and the music now tells you what you've already read in the lyrics.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's what we wanted to do.
Yeah,
I think you've succeeded. Yeah,
that's what we wanted to do. Yeah.
So how did you submit the songs to the band once you got these together? Did you get together as Uriah Heep in the rehearsal room, or did you send them off to Mick and the guys?
Yeah, I mean, 3 months before we entered pre-production up at Chapel Studios, we were lucky to get pre-production for 2 weeks at Chapel Studios, where we recorded the album, which was a luxury, which was great, because it's in the middle of nowhere. We can just focus on our work and not get interrupted with anything. So what happened was during that time of the lockdown, everybody obviously had lots of time to put lots of ideas on the table, even though Davey only came up with one track. Mick and Phil had lots of ideas. I had 20. I think Mick and Phil had like 30 or 40 or 50. There's always plenty of stuff there. And we sent off various things to each other. And then when we got into pre-production, we sort of, you know, Jay Ruston as well, we sent stuff to him to have his input, because you need and the management, because you need those other bits of input. You're so close to home with your own stuff. You just want those other people to have their say as well. And then we just agreed as a band that these 11, 12 songs, whatever it was at the time, should be the primary ones that we end up recording that will go on the album. And if they're not feeding right in the studio or whatever, we've got loads of backup. And that's how it worked out, really.
Yeah, it must have been. What was it like when you started to hear the songs come together as Uriah Heep? You know, because this is the first time you've contributed songs to a Uriah Heep album, and here you are now, and they're starting to come alive in the pre-production, as you say. What did that feel like?
Oh, it was great. I mean, a little bit nervy, but great, because you sometimes think that your own song is not going to be played by Uriah Heep, you know. It's like, it's sort of thing you do in your bedroom, and it's like you play it to your mum and dad and your brother, and they go, great, and that's it, you know, and no one else wants to hear it. But this was, this is going on the album. So, but I did know when I was putting the demos down with Simon, I did know that the songs were good.
They are.
They had the elements.
Yeah.
But you still need to get the confidence build up from everybody else. And as we started to put it down, it was a great feeling. Yeah, there wasn't a lot to be changed, to be honest. There's a little bit of the key we changed a little bit from a demo, and a couple of lyrics got changed. Bernie didn't feel comfortable with a couple of the lyrics on You'll Never Be Alone, I think it was. But overall, there wasn't a lot to be changed, because the way in which me and Simon worked, and it's a bit like Dave as well, unlike Mick and Phil, is we bring in basically a finished demo. So it could be an album release. Wow. And the reason why we do that is obviously you want your song to be represented in the best manner. And luckily for us, as I said, I usually do a lot of arrangements in Heap's music anyway. Since I've joined, I'm full of the ideas, because I want the best for the band, just like everybody else does.
Yeah.
And Jay was very happy with the arrangements. Nothing really got changed too much. And, it was great to see him come to life.
Because you mentioned just that Hurricane could have easily just been about the weather, but you tweaked it so that lyrically it was about, like, the, you know, the old gods and the old ways. And there's a thread here going through these four songs. You've got Hail the Sunrise, Hurricane, You'll Never Be Alone, Fly Like an Eagle. And each of the songs has got, like, there's lyrics about stone circles, nature, folklore, almost meditation and ancient spirituality. Were you aware that they're all interlinked in a way in the subject matter?
No, not really. I think those particular four that got chosen was just pure coincidental. But we, as again, instead of what we call speaking the obvious,
yeah,
it's nice to, I think, delve a bit deeper and make the lyrical content a bit more interesting. And I think that does pull out going back,
yeah,
and pulling out some of those, you know, ancient type of things without being a bit too, what's the word, too ancient. It's a fine, yeah, balance between,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
having a clever lyrical content or copping out a little bit on the lyrics.
Yeah. I mean, You'll Never Walk Alone, it's 8 minutes long almost, and it's
never pretty... be alone. You'll never walk alone with Jerry the Bassmakers.
It's a great song. And again, it's lyrically, it's very different and quite, you know, and it says like something about ancient folklore and stuff like that. But musically, I mean, the whole album, it's a rock, hard rock album, but it's quite prog in places. You know, there's a lot.
That's what we want. That's the element, yeah, we wanted to bring in, yeah, to the dream, because we said, you know, with Into the Wild and Outsider, there wasn't a tremendous amount of prog in there. So we said, look, on this album, we've got to up to our game. Living a Dream went down so well.
Yeah,
we've
brilliant.
Got to add a little bit more of an element. It either means some fantastic songs in themselves, but why don't we just make it a little more proggy? Because, you know, Heap fans love that side of...
They do. Yeah, we do. We do. Yeah.
So that's why there's, you know, a few long tracks on there. So we had to put that element in just to try and be as good as Living a Dream, really.
Yeah, that, I mean, that is such a great album. That was your first one with the new producer, wasn't it?
Jay Rustin.
With Jay, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic sound on that album, and obviously on the new one as well. Now, when you're going to go out live, and I think you've got some festival dates lined up this year, are you hoping to play one of these one of your tunes?
Not at the festivals. We tend to literally do our festival set.
So I suppose you haven't got a lot of space, have you, for the new stuff?
No, but having said that, we may, because of the album being out and because the album's gone down so well with the reviewers and fans,
yeah,
it wouldn't hurt to probably do one track off that album.
And Hurricane was a single.
Rehearsals, you never see.
Yeah.
You never know which one will get picked.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very hard thing for us to... It may be a wake the sleeper scenario that turns up where we played every single track.
Wow, yeah.
Defined with the classics.
Yeah, because I think... It's interesting, and there's no doubt that Wake the Sleeper to Cows and Colours have been some of Uriah Heep's finest albums to me. Every lineup of Uriah Heep is special. But yeah. I think that there was a time, and I'm going back before Wake the Sleeper, where people kind of, when they thought of Uriah Heep, they thought of the Byron period as being like the golden age. And then after that, whatever happened then, it wasn't quite as good. But I personally feel, and I'm definitely feel this myself, is that since Wake the Sleeper, that Uriah Heep have just gone from strength to strength. And now I think a lot of fans, that when I see online, people just see the current lineup and the whole output from the band has been classic Heep. I mean, this album, Chaos and Colour, is as good as anything that any lineup from Uriah Heep have put out.
We're pleasantly surprised at the reviews and what the fans are saying about it. And it's nice for us to have that feedback. And I think, you know, obviously there are fans out there that won't have anything said against what they call the classic lineup. But, you know, what they've got to realise is that everybody in Heap is 100% passionate. And we really do 100% play with so much emotion on stage. And when we put out an album, we're 100% again trying to do the best that we can. So what they have got is may not be the classic lineup from the golden years that they say, fine, that was there and then. But you haven't got a lazy band that goes through the motions of anything. What you've got is the same amount of passion, the same amount of intensity of everything. So, yeah, we're really pleased that a lot of the fans are, in fact, warming to the new lineup.
And also, you are probably one of the hardest working bands on the planet from your generation, really, when a lot of other bands would spend almost a decade between records. You're a heap of just always there, you know, absolutely fantastic. Now, one thing I'd like to ask you is, I've read on another interview that one of your favourite albums is Spectrum by Billy Cobham.
Oh, yeah, it has to be, doesn't it?
So, and I know other things in your career, you've touched on jazz, because I've always felt that the best drummers are the ones who've got this swing of jazz. Is jazz like something that you grew up with, or you've...
Well, it's 100% for me. I was, you know, crawling around beating on plastic bowls with spoons at 2 years old. I had my first lesson at four. I made my first £30 a week at six. I was depping in the West End doing Jesus Christ Superstar when I was 12, and I was playing with all the 60 stars and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
From the age of 12, 13, 14. And the whole of that time I was playing jazz, because my drum teacher was a big jazz nut and my dad was a jazz accordion player, a very, very good one as well. And my teacher also slipped into the Chuck Mangione, Tom Scott, Lee Whitmore, you know, the jazz funk, and then the rock thing with the Billy Cobham. And that's all I played. I didn't know anything about this other world of classic rock and metal at all, because my whole surroundings didn't take me down that road. And I was so busy practicing and playing and being a kid, not doing kid stuff, just practicing and playing, I didn't investigate those areas. So it was very late, later, you know, sort of 20 years old, 21 years old, before I even knew about that world. So my whole upbringing was jazz. And I do feel as though it does add a very special ingredient. You can hear it in the drummers playing.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. So when you, as you went through your career, how did you get the opportunity to play with Heap? Was that on your radar that they were looking for a drummer, and what it was like?
It came to me because I was doing lots of demonstrations all over the UK that I used to do for another drum company I played with, another cymbal company I played with. And because my clinics, I'm quite an animated drummer and I'm quite funny and stuff like that, my clinics always used to go down well. And so I used to go back to a certain dozen drum stores throughout the UK because it went down so well, they'd ask me back all the time. Well, one of the music stores was in Hull called Repercussion. It was run by a guy called Phil Otin. And Trev lives in Hull. Trev Boulder. Well, Phil used to say to Trev, you've got to come and see this guy play Russ Gilbert. He's unbelievable. Well, every time I played there, obviously Heap being such a busy band, he was always touring. And this one occasion I played there, he wasn't touring, and he came to see me play. And afterwards he said, that's some of the best drumming I've heard for ages. Have you got to go back early tomorrow? You're staying in the hotel. I said, I'm staying in the hotel. He said, have you got to rush off? I said, no. He said, come round for lunch, just have a chat. And he just wanted to be a mate. And it wasn't until about 7 years later, I think, that I got a phone call off Trev's, because we used to speak regular. I got a phone call off Trev and he said, look, Lee's really not in good shape. We've just signed a major record deal, and we got a world tour to go with it. Do you fancy it? That's how it came about.
Yeah. Wow.
I didn't know it before then. I had recognised some of the songs, but I wasn't fully aware of the band because my drumming career had gone down a different circle, a different way. But then obviously I investigated Heap and loved it. I thought, flipping it, this is great, with a world tour and a record. I can't wait to do that. And there was 240 drummers worldwide, a lot of chances. They whittled it down, the last 40 at Terminal Studios in London, and the audition. And I knew I was going to get it. I was so confident. What I didn't want to do is be a Lee Kerslake clone. And if they wanted a Lee Kerslake clone, they wouldn't have picked me.
Yeah.
So I said, this is my time. I'm Russell Gilbert. This is my opportunity, and I'm going to take it. And I did it, and I got the audition. In fact, I came off the drums talking to Mick Box about various things, and after 10 minutes, I thought, hang on a minute. You sound like you've given me the gig. He said, you have got the gig. Now I'm going to go around the pub and get pitched and celebrate.
And and Wake the Sleeper, what a hell of an album for you to join on. I mean, it was like a real comeback album for them. It's like one of their best for...
I'll tell you a little secret. Yeah. They'd already written the album because they had the contract and they were ready to deliver the album. But because of Lee's health issues...
Yeah, of course.
...they'd written a very docile album because he wouldn't be able to play it.
Of course,
when I get the audition, coming in with double bass drums all blaring like this, I had to rewrite the whole album, which they did in about a week and a half. And then about a week after that, I'm in pre-production. Then a week after that, we're recording the album. Then I had to forget that and do another week's rehearsals to do the live shows. So it was pretty full on, but great fun.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. And then the follow-up Into the Wild is again an absolute classic, isn't it? But I think that album and the follow-up Outsider produced by Mike Paxman.
Mike Paxman did those three, yeah.
Again, all fantastic albums. Now, yeah. I've noticed that whenever Uriah Heep kind of does come into land and you have a bit of spare time around you, you seem to be busy again, putting out requests to say, does anyone want any help or whatever? And you've just done an album with White Spirit and, you know, you seem to be a bit of a workaholic as well. Would that be fair to say?
Well, yes and no. I mean, what it is, it's my job and I have to maintain a standard. And the way I maintain a standard is by playing. It's not, you get to a certain standard where practice isn't necessarily the thing to do unless you're working on something specific.
Yeah.
You know, if I don't play jazz, like I haven't played jazz for 25, 30 odd years.
Yeah.
I'd have to get, if I had a jazz gig come up, I'd like to go in for a week and practice because the way in which I play jazz, if you haven't done it for a while, you've got to now revisit all of those touches and skills. But if I come off tour, of course I want to spend time with my family and I want to do various other bits and pieces. But after a couple of weeks, you know, I need to keep my chops up, as they call it. And plus also, I like playing music. I love playing the drums. So it's a nice head refresher thing for me to play with other artists, other styles of music. It keeps my juices going, keeps my chops up. And also it puts a smile on their faces because they really want my great playing. Many a time I've had to say, no, I can't do it because I'm busy with Heap. When I can do it, it's great pleasure for them, and I enjoy doing it.
Absolutely fantastic. And you're also very accessible on Facebook, where you do your weekly Facebook Live, where you're giving like combination of drumming tips and answering any questions that any fans have got.
I mean, I like giving back to the music world because it's been good to me. And I just, you know, I know how hard it is to learn an instrument as well as progress in the music business. Plus also the fans give their time. Without fans, we haven't got a gig. So it's good to give back and people appreciate it. And it isn't really a lot. It's just that obviously people appreciate I put the time in. And so I appreciate what they do. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, fantastic. So the new album is out, which I've got here. I've been playing it constantly. And it's, the reviews have been fantastic. It's gone down well everywhere. I've looked on all the forums, all the reviews, and I'll be doing a separate review for it as well. I absolutely love it. I think you said on somewhere else I heard you say, it's kind of, even the tracks that don't grab you straight away grow on you over time. Yeah. And I think it is different in a way. These four albums, which I've mentioned that you're on, they're all special to me, but this one has got so much more depth and variety on it. Lots of colour, I suppose, and chaos.
funny enough.
and so I know you've, as you say, you've got your festival gigs and you have to keep to almost like a greatest hits package set, really. So if there are any gigs you're doing where you're not in that scenario, will you see yourself putting in more tracks from this album? Do you think?
Almost definitely. There'll be a time when we will be touring Chaos and Colour. That's what we'll do, tour the album. And as I said, the time we go into pre-production when we're really changing the set about is the time that we'll have a discussion on which tracks to do. And it may be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, who knows? But yeah, because not all tracks work live, not all tracks will work with the flow of the set. But let's see. It's exciting.
Are you still able to kind of mix in tracks from Call of the Wild and you know, Wake the Sleeper and everything? Or it must be so difficult when you've got such a history that goes back over 50 years to know what to put in.
It's very difficult because, you know, you've got 25 albums worth of tracks now, and you can't do a 10-hour show. As much as people, because everyone's individual, and quite rightly so, they've got their own reasons to like certain songs. You can't put in everything. But, you know, like we, for a few years, we hadn't put in What Kind of God. That was in the 50th anniversary. You know, the good thing about the 50th anniversary, I know we played longer. We had an acoustic set, an electric set. But the good thing was we were able to, Confessions never been played by Uriah Heep. We brought that in the acoustic set. So we were able to bring songs back in that people haven't seen for a while, and we know that they love that. So we always are very conscious of trying to make a set that will cover as most people as possible. It's just that we can't play everything.
True. So what? So when can fans expect to see the band live? What's in the diary for Uriah Heep?
Well, it's festivals and festival season.
Yep.
And then it looks like at the moment, nothing. We want to start 2024 off with a bang, doing Chaos and Colour.
Wow.
But at the present time, there's nothing in that's concrete.
Wow. So that's how far you've got to plan ahead. It's like, here we are barely into 2023, and you're planning 2024 to conquer the world with the new album.
Exactly. Hopefully.
I'm sure you will. Well, thank you very much, Russell, for your time. It's been absolutely fantastic. And I mean it from the heart that I think their new album is one of the best, the band have done. In fact, one of my friends from school just texted me before I did this interview and says, oh, they're on a roll, the band, that they just get better and better. And for a band to be getting better and better after 50 odd years, you know, there's not many that can say that. At all.
I really appreciate it, Phil. Thanks very much.
No, thank you. Thanks for your time, and hopefully I'll talk to you soon. And good luck with what you Uriah Heep do next.
Yeah, thanks ever so much. I look forward to the review on the album as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in. And a special thank you to my guest, Russell Gilbrook from Uriah Heep. Please check out the Now Spinning magazine website at nowspinning.co.uk. There's loads of content on there. And please subscribe to this podcast and the YouTube channel. And I look forward to seeing you on my next episode.